sermon text this morning is from Proverbs 1, 1 through 7. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. This is the word of God.
Great, thank you. Okay, firstly, let's look at the title. Right. These are introductions, right? We're just trying to get our heads around what is it that we're getting into and what is it that we're reading. Firstly, let's just look at the title. What is the book of Proverbs? The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Now firstly, right, the Proverbs it's a collection of proverbs. A proverb is a short poem. And like all poems, these proverbs contain concrete, pithy, and vivid expressions or sayings, like Proverbs 11:22. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without discretion. All right, now that's a shocking image. A pig dressed up and adorned with gold rings is something that's a little bit disarming. It lowers our guard. We laugh at it. But it draws us in to try and understand what it is that it really means. And you're going to come across many descriptive proverbs that are like that in the book of Proverbs as we work through this book. And as we do, we should enjoy their wit, right? They're funny. But we should also mine their meaning. That is, we need to dig down to understand, because there's going to be a surface take, right? And then there's going to be something for us to consider. That is deeper down. And like all poetry, that's what poetry does. The language of a proverb can become something that is the language of your heart, like a song lyric, right? Like a lyric from a song that you really love that comes to be something that you express what you've experienced or what you're feeling. They become the shortcut kind of communications that help us to explain or say paragraphs of things. You know, we can just cut it down to a couple of words. An example that I think of is that when I was in college, my roommate and I, because, you know, we were aspiring to be spiritual giants, you know, on campus, we would commit to pray every Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. at the local Episcopal church in Boone, because they didn't lock their doors ever. Incidentally, I'll tell you about the time that the skunk got in. Didn't make Wednesday morning that pleasant. But 6 a.m., you know, we would pray either there or at the student union in the chapel there. And when I was sluggish about getting up in the morning, you know, wanting to hit that snooze button, continuing to lay there, my roommate would ask me, he would speak a proverb to me, and he would ask the question, "How long will you lie there, you sluggard?" That's a proverb, right? You know, when will you get up from your rest? A little folding of the hands, right? And poverty will come on you like a bandit, right? But all you would have to say is, "How long will you lie there, you sluggard?" Now, he was prodding me, he was teasing me, and he wasn't just asking me a question. He was speaking a proverb, and that proverb was an invitation into a life of discipleship, right? Into a life of following God and walking with God. And a proverb can do this. That's the things that proverbs do. Another thing, right, that a proverb, it bears the mark of Hebrew poetry, not so much the way in which we understand poetry, but Hebrew poetry. In the way in which it parallels thoughts. You know, you're going to read Proverbs and you're going to say, yeah, you just said that. Why is that? And the way in which you might be able to think about it is like if you had a gold stone or a piece of crystal and you're turning this in your hand and looking at its different facets from different viewpoints. It's meant for you to pause and to think and to turn it around, to roll it around, and not just in your eyes, right, but in your head. Right? Hebrew poetry does employ puns, but it's not so much about rhyming. It works through these thoughts or these concepts. And it takes a thought and it reframes it in such a way as to draw out a meaning or a nuance of what's being meditated on. And so, right, in this passage, we read that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. This contrast, right, between saying who the wise are and who the fool is. And it speaks about it with respect to the inclinations of the heart of the person. And that leads us kind of to another thought here, is that a proverb is a puzzle. You know, you can read, like as I said earlier, you can read Proverbs quickly. You can gain meaning at their face value from what it is that you're reading on this one level. But again, Proverbs are meant to be rolled around like a Rubik's Cube. Okay, moving from different sides, and you turn it around, and as you're looking at it from all sides, right, you begin to piece things together, to put it together. These proverbs, over the course of the whole book, as it's an assembled work, they interact with each other. In one sense, you're going to find proverbs that are repeated over and over again in these collections of the wise, and, you know, collections of these proverbs from the men of Hezekiah, but you're going to find sometimes that they're tweaked a little bit. And others, you're going to find, seem to flat out contradict each other. Proverbs 12:21 says of the righteous, no ill befalls the righteous. Is that true? I have issues maybe. No ill befalls the righteous, but the wicked are filled with trouble. But Proverbs 16:25 says, and it doesn't offer any confidence along those lines, it just says this, there's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death. Like, well, okay, now I got that. I can believe that. In their devotional on the book of Proverbs, Tim and Kathy Keller, they write in God's wisdom for navigating life. He says this, there is an order that God put into things when he created the world and by which we all must abide. But on the other hand, this is a fallen world, distorted by sin, and the wise know that the created order does not always work, nor is it always easy to discern. We're not handed answers in the book of Proverbs by which our ability to recall them is being tested. That's not living life, and that's not what the Proverbs do for us. We are being handed puzzles by which we're invited to make sense of the way things are. Now, a second matter which we're going to learn and that we see in verse 1 is that the Proverbs are of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. And as we consider that, one of the things that we're going to see when we read the Proverbs is that not all of the Proverbs are attributed to Solomon. Proverbs 1 through 9 is kind of the introduction to the book of Proverbs, and I'll have more to say about that next week as we get into it. But you're going to find other collections of wise sayings in the book of Proverbs. The Proverbs are collected by Hezekiah's men. There's a section. There's a collection of the sayings of the wise. There are the oracles of Agur and of Lemuel. And for the last chapter, right, there's no author who is attributed the song of praise at the end of the book. And that also kind of gets to the purpose of such a collection. These things have been brought together. There's a fount of wisdom. It begins with Solomon, right, and it continues. In the verse that follows the passage that we read this morning, in verse 8, we read that the first of 10 speeches in which the book is addressed to here, these first 9 chapters, to my son. And I think what this, that had a purpose when Solomon wrote it, but as it was later collected, I think it came to be understood in terms of a broader audience. Right? There are some commentators who believe that the book of Proverbs was finally collected and assembled for young men who were preparing to work in jobs of administration in the king's court. And as a counselor to the king, as a sage or a wise man, he would assist the king in developing strategies and tactics as to how one rightly rules and governs. So one of the ways in which you could think about what wisdom is the skill of diplomacy. Now, a second thing to keep in mind is that the scriptures do not consider wisdom as something that is merely found in the sphere of general revelation, like that stuff that's out there, that everybody has access to wisdom in all its fullness. There are some problems that you cannot think yourself out of. There's not enough counsel for you. There's not enough information out there. You cannot think yourself out of it. But these collective sayings we read, they begin coming to us from Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. And that means that the book of Proverbs, unlike other collections of wisdom literature, the book of Proverbs finds itself in the flow of redemptive history. That's why it's in the Bible. And you'll remember that when Solomon, as a young boy, became king over Israel, the Lord asked Solomon, "What gift could I give you as you are becoming king?" And do you remember what it is that Solomon asked for? Wisdom. And that greatly pleased the Lord. The Lord was pleased with Solomon's request, and he gave him the wisdom that was asked for. Right? And this shows us that wisdom, true wisdom, is something that is a gift that is given by God. It's not an achievement. It's a gift. And Solomon's wisdom came. And we read in 1 Kings 4, verses 29 to 33, that God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure, and breadth of mind like the sand of the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the east and all of the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all other men, wiser than Ethan the Ezrahite. You heard of him? Wiser than him. And Heman, Calcol, Darda, the sons of Mahol, and his fame in all the surrounding nations. Was in all the surrounding nations. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees from the cedar that is in Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the wall. He spoke also of beasts and of birds and of reptiles and of fish. So wisdom is a category of information, of knowledge, as a resource. It's not merely this ability to recall information. Wisdom is the ability, get this, wisdom is the ability to relate it. To take this piece of information that you have and be able to rightly apply it to the situation. Solomon's wisdom wasn't that he wrote 3,000 proverbs, it's that he also wrote songs and spoke of trees and plants, wild beasts and birds, as well as reptiles and fish. He was able to see how it all fit together. Solomon was an observer. And in addition to the world, his awareness of the world around, true wisdom for us works to help us see the connections between the world around and the Lord who made those things. And as it relates to wisdom, we're going to see ultimately how Jesus Christ is the embodiment of wisdom. Jesus is the Word made flesh. He is, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 1:30, become to us wisdom from God, righteousness and sanctification and redemption. And it's going to be in Jesus that we find the key to unlock for us all of the wisdom that God offers. Now, secondly, and these next two points are a lot shorter, but secondly, the objective, the teaching goals of Proverbs, there are two objectives in learning wisdom. The first is to find, and you see it in verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction and to understand words of insight. To know wisdom and instruction is to have a character that is built upon truth, right? And to understand words of insight is to be able to think straight, right? Get those two. That's helpful. To know wisdom and instruction is to have character built upon truth, while to understand words of insight is to be able to think straight. The second objective in learning wisdom is found in verses 3 and 4. Wisdom points us to a true character, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Right, a person who is able to deal wisely from a personal character ruled by righteousness, justice, equity, prudence, knowledge, and discretion speaks to the kind of person who is shaped by the Proverbs. Right? That's the kind of person that are being developed. Right? These character traits, notice, they're not in being clever. That's not the same thing. You're not being trained up into being able to scoff at things or to tear others down. These qualities aren't about winning at all costs, nor are they about never admitting defeat. To be educated in the way of the Proverbs is to become the kind of person who works within the constraints of the world while not living as if this world is all that there is. Right? Let alone that it contains all that's worth living for. But that's not all, right? Verse 6 tells us that a student of the Proverbs can learn to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. That is, that they're going to learn how to think. They will develop a capacity for reasonableness. And being reasonable is the capability of being able to negotiate a way through a problem or an issue that does not give in to one's fears or to one's demand to have it their own way or to compromise in such a way as it violates God's word, his expressly stated commands. The student of Proverbs learns to live faithfully. Okay? And I'm turn that around in your head a little bit. To live faithfully as in obediently, to live faithfully by faith. Now, there's several groups that are mentioned here, right? Not only are there the sons who are immediately addressed, right, or the students who are learning, but even the wise are invited back into the school of wisdom. Right? One can always grow in wisdom. It's not a bounded set of sayings. It is a way of living. And who else are invited to live wisely? Is it only the achievers, only the wise, only the thinkers? No, the wisdom, the offer to learn wisdom is also extended to a group or a class of people that the Proverbs calls the simple. And it's the simple, actually, who need wisdom the most. Through Proverbs, we're going to meet the simple. There are several ways in which the Hebrew word peti can be translated. It is translated simple, like it is here, but sometimes it's translated naive or ignorant. And the Hebrew of that word, it's related to another Hebrew word that means to be open. Now, that's not like being open-minded, unless that's being so open-minded that your brains fall out. It's not like being open-minded. A peti, is a sort of person who keeps their options open. Proverbs 22:3 says, "The prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple, they go on and suffer for it." That is, a prudent person foresees what's coming, and they work to avoid it, while the simple person doesn't get out of the way. They have to learn things the hard way. And why is it that the simple have to learn the hard way? Because they will not decide and commit to an action that would avoid what's coming. A simple-mindedness, right? It's a folly of the young. Some of us were kids who had to learn things the hard way. It didn't matter how much our parents told us to not do that, right? That's hot. You know, I'm just going to put my hand on there and see. It is a folly of the young, but it grows. It matures, like all things. And it matures into other kinds of fools and foolishness that we find in Proverbs. Right? The indecisive person, the simple person who continues to leave themselves open or keep themselves open, grows into a person who scoffs. Right? They're standing back and they're looking at what other people do and they just scoff at what it is that they're doing. So that they don't ever have to act, don't ever have to do anything. The mocking, right? They mock others who have dedicated themselves to the way. And this contempt of scoffing, right, it matures into a stubborn obstinance, a bullheadishness that becomes and can grow into something that is ruthless and cruel. Right? Keeping your options open doesn't prevent you from folly or danger. Right? Steerage for any vehicle, whether it's a car, a ship, a plane, it only comes from momentum. You have to act. You have to move. And you're moving somewhere. And lastly, right, we have this opportunity. We begin our pursuit of wisdom by walking the way, by stepping into a journey. We begin by stepping through a threshold. And we come to that first step in the towards this destination of being wise. And what is the first step to becoming wise? The fear of the Lord is the beginning. Right? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Fools never learn. Right. Sometimes we call that doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Right? Fools are those who hate instruction. Fools will not learn. They already know it all. They already are resistant to counsel. They're going to do it their way. And in doing it their way, it means, right, they're going to live life any old way they please. Right? Sometimes we may look at that and say, that life, you know, it seems like they're succeeding in what it is that they're doing. That's there is a way that seems right. But in the end, the fool, right, has contempt for and is deaf to the relationships that are out there in God's creation. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, right, of wisdom and instruction. It is a helpful description for the kind of person who has begun to rightly make a connection of how it is that they relate to the world and consequently relate to the creator of the world. Right? God is not for them some sort of slot machine or a butler. For the one who's beginning to be wise, they recognize that God is the one around whom the universe revolves. As we step out the threshold today and on this path to wisdom, let's give up the simplicity of indecisiveness. Let's do as Bob has reminded us, to commit. Make that step. Commit to the Lord. Commit your way to His way. Commit to following Jesus where He goes. Commit to building our lives upon His word.